I don't know what's real. I don't know what's not real.
Limited Capacity is a collection of six darkly amusing stories about the mysterious ways we interact with the internet and with each other.
There's something going on with him. It's like an act. I don't trust him.
What?
You're staring at me like I should say something, but I don't really know what to do here.
That's the whole name of the game. Don't talk about how the town isn't real. Do you understand?
Limited Capacity. Available now on CBC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
For some of us, there's a distinct moment. Your relationship is this huge plate glass window. What a view! And out of nowhere, or a long time coming, a tiny hammer taps it. And maybe you don't even hear the tap. After all, he's just sitting on the couch with his socks. Or maybe it's not him. Maybe it's grief. Or, like, I don't know you, but maybe it's you. Just the slightest touch in the middle of the glass that borders the retaining walls of your gray garden's gorgeous. Tap. And cracks spirograph out.
This is Play Me, your digital theater. We transform the hottest contemporary plays into bingeable audio dramas. I'm Laura Mullen.
And I'm Chris Tolley. Welcome to Play Me. You're listening to the podcast that transforms theater scripts by award-winning writers into bingeable audio fiction. You've just heard a clip from today's feature, the critically acclaimed solo show, Guilt, A Love Story, by writer and performer Diane Flax. Hi, I'm Chris Tolley, here with my co-host, Laura Mullen.
Hey, Chris. So we are here. We are at the last show of the season. And I have to say that we have saved a really great play to close another season of our podcast. And I know it's a show that really touched both of us when we read it. We have known and followed Diane Flax's career for years. In fact, I remember our university days at York in theater. She was a grad that was on the rise, and she returned because she wrote a show that director Tom Diamond had commissioned. And I got to be an assistant director on that project and watch them work together, which was such an education for a young theater student. It was such a privilege to be able to see them work and get a master class in theater craft.
She has been a real force in theater, film, and TV ever since debuting her infamous solo shows in the 90s. She's written and starred in hits like Myth Me, By a Thread, Random Acts, Bear With Me, and Waiting Room. Diane has also had an impressive career writing for shows like Baroness Von Sketch Show, Working Mums, The Broadside, and the classic 90s show Kids in the Hall. However, perhaps her most significant role has been that of mother to her two sons, whom she co-parents with her ex-wife. The challenges that came with the end of her marriage, especially when children were involved, brought about feelings of guilt. Her play, Guilt, A Love Story, explores her relationship with regret, fear, and guilt. Diane just completed a whirlwind tour across Canada after premiering her show at the Tarragon Theatre.
This is part one of two of Guilt, A Love Story, written and performed by Diane Flax, recorded in studio at CBC in Toronto.
I wanna dance with you.
I've been drinking a lot. I've been drinking a bit much. So I asked my doctor, Dr. David Greenberg, Dr. David, I'm just wondering, hypothetically, how much wine is too much to drink?
Well, Diane, I've known you for 20 years. You're a good Jewish girl. How much could you be drinking?
Yeah, I know. Right? But how much is reasonable?
3 or 4 glasses of wine?
Phew!
A week?
Week? What?
Diane, is there a problem?
It's not a problem. It's the solution.
This is not a cry for help.
It is a cry for sangria. But it hit me. It made me realize, holy shit, I am drinking like a bottle a day. That is 30 bottles a month. So that's what it took for me to say. You got to start making your own. I can make 30 bottles of wine for $130. Oh, and thank you all for listening. You'll all be getting a Shiraz. Drinking numbs my guilt. I come by my guilt. Honestly, I'm Jewish.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Hang on a second. Son of a bitch.
Hello? Oh, hello, Miskite. Thanks be to God that you called. You are my life. You are my whole... What? What am I doing? What should I be doing? I'm sitting here alone like a stone. What are you doing?
Calling you?
Dead. I could be dead. It's been 3 days. You couldn't call? I could be lying on the floor, eh? On my stomach, dead. You need a quarter? I give you a quarter.
Booby, I called. The line was busy.
I can't have friends. Get married. Have babies. Oh, you should only replenish the Jews of the world. That's all I ask. And that you're happy. And that you call. If I could have called my family, I would. But they are dead in Auschwitz.
Guilt is the Jewish default setting. Like, if you don't know what to feel, you should feel guilty, probably. Guilt forms the basis of our morality. It is our golden rule. I should only not do something to you that would make me feel terrible for doing it. And you should only not do something bad to me so that you don't feel terrible. So nobody does nothing to nobody. Peace, harmony, shine. Another old Jew who we know, Sigmund Freud, defines guilt not as a moral construct, but as a feeling. Fear.
Fear of loss of parental love.
The parents stamp a sense of what is right on a child's superego, and when the child's ego is in conflict with that because they want to do something wrong, they fear that they'll lose their parents' love. And this deep feeling of panic crossed with moral awakening plus empathy equals guilt. Eventually, guilt becomes integrated into a child's sense of self, evolving into their conscience. Guilt provides a conscience.
In many criminals, particularly youthful ones, it is possible to detect a very powerful sense of guilt which exists before the crime. It is almost as if it was a relief to fasten this unconscious sense of guilt onto something real and immediate.
So, like, if you have subconscious guilt for something that you're fantasizing about, you'll be driven to do that thing. Guilt provides a warning shot. A prophylactic. A vaccine. Mind you, Freud also said,
the woman who refuses to see her sexual organs as mere wood chips designed to make a man's life more comfortable is in danger of becoming a lesbian, an active phallic woman, an intellectual virago with a fire of her own. The lesbian body is a particularly pernicious and depraved form of the female body in general. It is susceptible to autoeroticism, clitoral pleasure, and self-actualization.
Check, check, check. Why do people have such a problem with Freud, do you think?
Guilt is biblical. Literally. When Adam and Eve's eldest son, Cain, murdered his brother, Abel, he felt no guilt. Now, I don't know if it's because it didn't exist yet or because he just didn't feel bad. I don't know. It doesn't say. But it does say that the one true God, who was busy with his multi-layered views of the universe all at once, heard Abel's blood screaming from the open mouth of the earth which had swallowed it. So God, like most modern parents, gave Cain a chance to hang himself.
Cain, where's your brother Abel?
And Cain replied with the infamous line,
Hashomer achi anochi, my brother's keeper am I?
So God put a mark on Cain, an external stamp on his superego, and he declared that
all people,
there's Adam and Eve and Cain and Abel, but whatever, all people, who see Cain should shun him. Cain, the first dude to be canceled. Without guilt, we have no moral guideposts. We have Trumpland and Putinverse and Weinstein and Allen and Epstein. Oh, God. So many Jewish perverts. It's just, I can't. They're not losing sleep because they don't sleep. They hang upside down all night in their coffins. This moment, this culture needs old-fashioned guilt, like, I did bad, I feel bad. I snooped your emails, which, to be fair, you left your computer open. But no, I snooped, and your password is my birthday, so it's kind of like you wanted me to snoop. No, I snooped. I made revenge porn. I tweeted, don't all lives matter, and then I stuck a black square on my profile like a fucking hypocrite. I ate your yogurt from the office fridge, even though you put your name on it, Vicky. I own what I did. It was bad. I feel bad about it. It is a dark times, people. The insurrection and Instagram and polarizations and pandemic and wars and wildfires and murder hornets and monkeypox, for fuck's sakes. We need repentance. We need accountability, responsibility, empathy. Guilt is good. Guilt is the bomb. I love being a mom. It is the best thing I ever did. I have two boys. I'll show you pictures later. We're sort of, you know, on the radio. Can't really. They are the best. No, I mean, they are the best. So maybe don't bother so much with yours. I was the least likely to in the mom department. I was living my life focused on my partner and my career as an actress in all seriousness. I went from, I don't even think about kids to,
excuse me. Did you just roll your eyes at my kid? Did you just fucking roll your fucking eyes at my kid? That's right. You better run, motherfucker.
I wasn't even supposed to carry the baby. I wanted to preserve this body. But my ex wasn't getting pregnant, so I started trying to. I thought of it as helping to push the car. Instantly, I changed from an easygoing, good Jewish girl with a long fuse and no boundaries into someone I have often referred to as Ferocita Afirosa. Ferocita is a maternal version of the Incredible Hulk. Instead of turning green, Ferocita burns a tasteful lilac.
You'll never roll your eyes at someone else's kid again, you piece of shit!
Now, hip, young, savvy mummy TikTokers, as they sip their 5 p.m. white wine at 3 p.m. out of their toddler's sippy cup, might take a different view.
Hey, mummies! Toddlers are so annoying. They're literally assholes. They 100p all cap ruin your...
Hudson? What did mommy say about interrupting her when she's doing her TikToks? Hudson,
let's put on our listening ears. Spencer, could you take Hudson so that I could have 1 minute to my damn self? Hashtag live your best life.
Now, these savvy moms might accuse me of being an old school, self-sacrificing mother, of feeding myself last, eating the burnt toast. But it's no sacrifice when you are delighted to be with them. Have you seen my kids? I will get that picture to you somehow. As a feminist, as a third wave woman, a female, as a cis biped, as a lesbian, as a queer lady, as a short, slightly hippie Jewish human who identifies as a white cyclist, who has been ready to take back the night for 20 or 30 years now, I know women have to stop self-sacrificing, stop subsuming ourselves into patriarchal roles, wife, mother, deputy prime minister. But I kind of like self-sacrificing. It's my jam. Historically, I'm unimpeachable in the doing for others category. What are you doing? Sit down. What are you doing? What's going on? What's happening? What do you want? What do you need? 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 You hungry? You want some soup? I can make some soup. What do you... McDonald's? Honey, that's not even food. Because chickens don't have fingers. You know what, sweetie? You just sit. You sit. I got it. I got you. The great guru RuPaul says, if you can't love yourself, honey, how the hell are you going to love anybody else? Can I get an amen up in here? But some of us love ourselves through loving others. I make you soup. I love myself. I pick up your snotty Kleenexes. I love myself. Being a mom was the thing that I was the proudest of in the world. If all else failed, I did that right, building this family. Lesbians are do-it-yourselfers, right? And my ex and I were lesbian insemination revolutionaries. We're here. We're queer. We're inseminating with syringes stolen from a doctor's office. Here. We're queer. Our donors watching porn in the living room. Here. We're queer. The sperm spilled. I'm not going to touch it. Here. We're queer. Right. You get the idea. Here. We're queer. Should we just get another dog? But we're like, holy shit. We're making a family. How do you do it without the template of the patriarchal, heterosexist parenting structure? Seriously, how? You build a family's floors, its load-bearing walls, its movie nights, its early morning cuddles, brick by brick, until you create something rambling and structurally unsound, but gray gardens gorgeous. And then one person blows it all to shit with everyone inside. I created a shitstorm. Or, as my friend Bruce says, not a shitstorm, sweetie, but like someone took a shit into a whirring fan. A shit show! Ladies and gentlemen and non-binary friends from all over the continuum, welcome to the show! Good middle-aged mom busts out of her monogamous marriage, experiences sexual liberation at 50! Woo! Ladies, am I right? But she didn't think about what's gonna happen next. What's gonna happen? So sit back, relax, and enjoy the steaming pile of shit that you created and is now your life.
We'll be right.
I don't know what's real. I don't know what's not real.
Limited Capacity is a collection of 6 darkly amusing stories about the mysterious ways we interact with the internet and with each other.
There's something going on with him. It's like an act. I don't trust him.
What?
You're staring at me like I should say something, but I don't really know what to do here.
That's the whole name of the game. Don't talk about how the town isn't real. You understand?
Limited Capacity. Available now on CBC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
back.
I feel like I am walking around with a raccoon in a cage inside my chest at all times. You know that feeling?
Hello? Ah, yes. Pestaway. Hi. Yeah, I have a raccoon in my chest. Because I can feel it. Its talons scraping against my rib... my chest. It's just a normal human chest. It's a plexiglass box with bars on the front, and he's sort of banging against them with his little metal cup of Shiraz.
We're not going to be able to get it out of its cage, though, eh? Nope. If you try to open a gilt cage in a Jewish mother's heart, it's like popping a balloon full of pus. Just going to gum up the whole works. No, we're going to have to leave it in there for about, ever.
What are you looking at? What are you looking at? Yeah, I know, I'm cute with my little Hamburglar eyes. Hey, can I get another piece of pizza down here? Ah, never mind. I'll just Uber Eats one with my adorable opposable thumbs. You're a good mother. Look at all this shrapnel, you selfish piece of shit. Speaking of shit, I'm gonna eat a piece of my own shit and wash it down with some of the 30 bottles of wine that are sloshing around in here. Let me out.
I drink because it helps me deal with the raccoon in my chest, which is also why...
So, Diane, you're drinking. Are you also smoking?
Well, I have to kill the raccoon in my chest.
What?
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 I don't think people change unless they are backed up against a wall of razor blades. Or there is a river of chocolate flowing at their feet that they can dive into. I had razor blades.
Razor blades? What? You grew apart? Aww. You were unhappy? Big whoop. Grown-ups don't have a right to be happy. You know who does? Kids. You gave them security and love and had them nestled in there all nice and safe, and then you sliced them apart. And how happy are you now? You're the razor blade. You're the bomb. And not in a good way. Let me out.
Right before the COVID, I went to a reunion gathering of my groovy yoga mama group. We all met when we were gigantically pregnant in Shavasana, and we all have teenagers now, and no one has, done a little nip and tuck and stretch, and no one has admitted it. But we all did admit that we'd reached a precipice in our long-term relationships. Betrayals discovered while snooping our partners' phones. If they don't want us to snoop, then they shouldn't have phones. Exactly. Or the malaise of the cumulative weight of those little things that drive you fucking pick up your fucking socks, for fuck's sakes. Crazy. He just sits on the couch. I can't even look at him. Never mind have sex with him. Look at him. Look. Oh, God. No, don't look. We gazed at each other with fondness for who we were. When we thought the hardest thing about becoming a mom was suffering through Shavasana without farting.
Come into the moment. Are we all in the moment? Are we? Are we all in the present? Presently? Are we all in this moment right now? This one. And now this one. This one. And now this. Now this. Now this. And here we are. And there's another moment. And right now. And here we are. And everybody in the back is all in the shh. No talking in yoga.
good for you for coming to postnatal yoga. Don't worry about your babies. They are being mindfully minded in the room next door by women from the Philippines with children of their own elsewhere. You know, I don't see race. I just don't like you. I don't know what race you are, if Irish even is a race. Today, I am going to guide you through my mindful meditation.
Oh, sorry. I don't really want to meditate.
I'm so sorry. I've been mindfully eating a lot of raisins lately, chewing, consciously manifesting abundance. And I would start to think about all those people who told my ex-husband and I that all we needed to do was have a date night once a week, and how I wanted to push them, not to punch, to push, and how I wanted to have a therapist who would come to our house and who would give me drugs, and I would forget to chew my raisins. And I have discovered if you swallow too many raisins, you get the runs, which is one way to exercise your flabby pelvic floor muscles, but does nothing for your relationship. And exhale. He said our teak coffee table got more affection for me than he did. It's oak. Imagine you are on a peaceful lake. The waves are wavy.
Sorry, I just wanted to do a couple of Kegels.
Shh. You're on a lake. Lake. No distraction, no judgment. Lake. Lake. Look at you, new mothers with stomachs like sacks of jam. No, you don't look. I look. You listen. Look at you, jam sacks, on the pinnacle of family, building your dreams. I want you to imagine what your intention is for this practice today. Inhale light and love and exhale negativity. And speaking of negativity, let's all send a positive thought to my ex-husband's new girlfriend or someone else who has wronged you. Let's go into pigeon. Go into plank and take your left leg and turn it all the way around, twisting your kneecap to the other side. Plunk down and grind your pubic bone into your heel painfully. Some of you may queef. It's all right. Just let go. We all let go of things during the pandemic, didn't we? I let go of reading books and talking to my mother. But I didn't let go of chocolate almonds. Veronica is her name, and she got our daughter a PlayStation, so I told everyone she was my ex-husband's student, and now my daughter won't speak to him. Oh, and you can let go of pigeon and exhale. I wonder if they're going to have a baby. Now. Breathe.
We shove our yoga mats under our strollers with the matching cup holders and the little clip for our dog's leash. Our dog, our other child, who we are now neglecting. And we don't worry that we're going to become like that woman, that we're going to neglect our partners, or that we haven't gotten back to the sex yet. But we should. We should worry. You know, when you're in the tub and the air and the water are the exact right mix of warm and alone that transports you to another reality. And your partner, for the 10th time, pops in and leaves the door open, letting the cold air in the Toronto seep in. If you've recently had sex, you're tender. Honey, sweetie, oh my God. You are so adorably forgetful. Do you mind just closing the door with your precious fingers? But if you haven't in a while, it's like, oh my God, Q-tips again? Close the fucking door. Hate you. And if someone asks, if your baby and your partner were drowning, who would you save? And you say, my baby, of course. And you pretend to miss the stabbing pain that flits across your partner's face. And then you realize they're thinking the same thing. Phew. For some of us, there's a distinct moment. Your relationship is this huge plate glass window. What a view! And out of nowhere, or a long time coming, a tiny hammer taps it. And maybe you don't even hear the tap. After all, he's just sitting on the couch with his socks. Or maybe it's not him. Maybe it's grief. Or, like, I don't know you, but maybe it's you. Just the slightest touch in the middle of the glass that borders the retaining walls of your gray garden's gorgeous. Tap. And cracks spirograph out. It stands like that, majestic, terrible, the way it catches the light in sacred geometric prisms. You are standing in a snowflake of cracks. And then it shatters all around you. And you wish you could just pick it all up and put it back together. Or that you could see 10 years into the future. It's all okay. Or you look at the unrestrained air with your eyes of sand and gather your shredded skin and... I suggested couples therapy and opening our marriage. I don't know which one was more destructive. Actually, I do. And it rhymes with Schlupple's Larrapy. I just want to say one thing to anybody listening who is thinking about opening up their marriage. No! The French can do it, but we shouldn't try. The idea is that you each go out and you break. The idea is that you are realistic about monogamy. The idea is that one person can't be everything. Look, lots of people were doing it, even lesbians, everywhere we looked. There was this gray wave of women busting out. The goal, I was told by expert podcasters, was not to break up. It was to open up, to renovate the Grey Gardens Gorgeous, acknowledging the truth of where we are at. Sand down the sharp edges, fill in the cracks, maintain this fucker. Number one rule, don't fall in love. River of chocolate. I fell headfirst in mad love with a racehorse of a woman much younger than me who sought me out. Huh? Me? It was an avalanche, a tsunami. I welcomed the undertow.
Because that unconscious guilt that you had, you manifested it.
Shh, licka-lacka, don't look.
This what happens when you don't call. What's gonna happen?
I honestly thought if I did not have this love, I became unrecognizable to myself. My thirst was unrelenting. I was like Hagar in the desert, shown a well by God's angel. Hagar, the little Egyptian handmaid, otherwise known as of Abraham, is banished into the desert by a raging and barren Sarah, Abraham's wife. Hagar holds her son Ishmael to her dry breasts, the molecules of their bodies evaporating as they slowly die of thirst. Ishmael means God heard. Did he? Suddenly, Hagar looks up and sees an angel floating in front of her eyes. The viscous fluid of her retinas cracking as their moisture yearns to become part of the arid and unforgiving dust around her. Hagar speaks to God's angel, God, who abandoned her. El Roi, God, see me. Where are you? Why was I driven out of service to Abraham as his handmaid, blessed be the fruit, may the Lord open? Why am I and my son dying here in the desert? And the angel unfurls his long, shabby, blistered wings. And in only the second time in the Torah, God's angel speaks to a woman. In heartbreaking three-part harmony, he intones.
Oops. The one true God did see you, but he forgot about you. He's got a lot of lists. But he felt guilty, so he sent
me. Look.
And the angel stabs the tip of his wing into the earth, and a well appears.
A well, water to drink. Be grateful.
Or don't. Drink your resentment. And from your son Ishmael shall grow a great nation that will forever be at war with the other children of Abraham. Amen.
I drank my love in. It felt like killing and dying and being brought back to life all at once, and that made me feel entitled to behave like a reckless lunatic asshole. Studies show that falling in love or having a midlife crisis can cause people to behave as if they are in psychosis. I had both. We were like two doomed lovers barreling down a mountain intertwined with tequila and dancing alive, awake. Bam!
I wanna dance with you.
Woo! Yes!
You thought you could stay together and have it all? No, you vicious Caligula! No self-respecting partner's gonna stand for that bullshit!
We are separating. After 20 years.
That was part one of two of Guilt, A Love Story, written and performed by Diane Flax. Chris, this show just had such an impact on me when I first read it. And even though I haven't experienced divorce, I feel like I always feel guilty as a mom. It's sort of my default setting. And I think probably a lot of moms and parents feel that way. I think there's just a greater awareness now of making your kids' childhood happy, that certainly I'm guilty of this. Sometimes I might overcompensate for that, and then I feel guilty about that. And I think just generally guilt is maybe something that we as parents don't talk enough about.
Absolutely. I agree 100%. And I think also for me, what shows that Diane is just such a master at the writing craft is that she's able to tackle such a difficult subject, something that's just heartbreaking, and yet presented in such a funny way. Being able to do a show like this as a comedy, I think, is just such an incredible balancing act. We'll be back next with the moving conclusion to Guilt, A Love Story. But in the meantime, if you'd like to hear another autobiographical solo show, be sure to check out Take the Milk Now by Jiv Parasram. Available on Play Me in our archives.
Guilt, A Love Story was written and performed by Diane Flax. Alyssa Palmer directed the original theatrical production. The play received its world premiere by Tarragon Theatre in association with Mything, Inc. in 2023. It was developed by Mything, Inc. with support from the Canada Council and Tarragon Theatre and One Yellow Rabbit in Calgary, which presented a limited-run workshop production in 2022. Thanks for listening.
We'd love to know what you think about Play Me. You can connect with us by emailing playme@cbc.ca. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to Play Me wherever you get your podcasts. By subscribing, you can listen to all our past shows and you won't miss a single one of our new episodes. And while you're there, we would love it if you would consider rating and reviewing us. It helps spread the word about our podcast, bringing theater to a whole new audience. Play Me is produced by Laura Mullen and Chris Tolley in partnership with CBC Podcasts. Our associate producer is Brianne Tice. A special thanks to our CBC team. Anna Achete is our digital producer, and our executive producer is Cecil Fernandez.
The director of CBC Podcasts is Arif Narani, and the executive director is Leslie Merklinger.
Play Me is funded by the Canada Council for the Arts and the Ontario Arts Council. Play Me is an Expect Theatre production. For more information about our plays, please visit playmepodcast.com.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.